Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everybody. This is Tom Harris in beautiful Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to Tom Harris USA, episode number 93. And it is a hot and sticky summer day today, though we've had a little bit of a respite because this weekend was incredibly hot and humid. And I can only imagine what it must have been like down in Boys Town this weekend for the Gay Pride Parade. And now, normally Pete and I skip these things. It's not something that we really have a real need to go see. And of course I was very active in the parade in Cleveland when I was living there and marched several years in a row in Cleveland and even marched in Minneapolis one year in the parade there with the Brothers of Delta Lambda Phi. But the Chicago Festival, I mean they have this huge parade, and usually Gay Pride Sunday, which would have been yesterday as I record this. As you know, I don't always record the show very far in advance, but it was incredibly hot and humid, and I just couldn't have gone out and spent all day standing in the sun watching this parade go by. And I've been to many of these Gay Pride parades. And I tell you, you know, really, once you've been to one of them, you've pretty much been to all of them. The thing is with the Chicago parade is that it's over 3 hours long. And it's kind of like seeing all of them at once. And so we didn't really have a lot of interest in going down. We just kind of spent a quiet weekend here at the house, did the show on Saturday, and basically just kind of chilled out. And that was kind of nice for a change, not having a lot of running around to do. But anyway, this was an eventful weekend in general. This was the weekend of my 30th high school reunion, and of course I did not go to that. I kind of explained why on the live show, but I suppose I could repeat it here because I realize that there are some people who are listening to the show who don't listen to the live show. But essentially, I decided not to go to the 30th high school reunion because I'm going away in August to Minnesota for my family reunion. And overall, I think that going to the family reunion was going to be a whole lot more fun than going down to Fort Myers Beach, Florida, and spending a lot of time there. Judging from the pictures, it looked like it was devilishly hot down there. And it doesn't look to me like I would have been very comfortable anyway. But it's unfortunate. But, you know, I suppose that I would have gone maybe if I didn't have other things going on this summer. But you never know, you know, because I didn't go to my 10th reunion. And I've got this thing about, you know, the high school reunion thing. After 10 years, most people are not substantially different people than they were in high school. And then when you get to your 20th, you've had a few more life changes. And, you know, maybe you've had kids, or maybe you've gotten married, or maybe you've got this exciting new career, started a business, whatever. And so I enjoyed my 20th high school reunion. I made a, you know, great effort to go to it. And, you know, I had a great time there. And I was kind of looking forward to the 30th, and then it soon became fairly obvious that I wasn't going to be able to do both the family reunion and the class reunion because of money. And the main reason of that is because, of course, the 3 months that I spent unemployed last fall, and that's kind of why. But anyway, I'm looking forward to the family reunion, which is going to be on the second week of August, and I'm probably going to miss 2 weeks of shows, both here in the podcast and also 2 weeks of the live show. So that'll be between August 7th and August 14th. I probably will not be doing shows. And of course, that's getting kind of close to Tom Harris USA episode number 100. And as I've spoken about, I'm going to be taking a hiatus from the show after episode 100, and I'm going to actually go off and work on another project, which is podcast related. I'm not really sure if I can say anything quite yet about that because we're still kind of ironing out all the little details and exactly who's going to be involved in all that. So that'll be something a little bit interesting there, and a little bit of a teaser for those of you who may be fans of the show. But as I said a few shows ago, you know, you have to try to keep it fresh, and you have to try to keep your interests as well as the interests of your audience. And one of the things that I'm thinking about doing is a completely different type of show which would bring an entirely different listener set to the show. And so that is something that is in the works, and I'll say more about it as I can. Okay, so before I go on talking about travel, which is sort of the topic of the show today, I wanted to give you folks an update on the pigeons, which I had talked about in a previous show, and I've also mentioned it on the live show as well. The eggs hatched last week, right after the live show last week. And so it's now been a little bit over a week that we've had these baby pigeons, and there are two of them. And they are growing at an astronomical rate. They are enormous today. They are actually, the two of them together in the nest are bigger than either one of the parents. So that they are growing extremely, extremely quickly. And of course, the parents are unable to, you know, hide them in the way that they could in the first few days after they were born. I really wasn't even sure. I kind of figured that they were, because I saw some bits of eggshell, and also I noticed that they were sitting differently in the nest, the parent birds. But they are huge, and I was really kind of impressed by how fast they're growing. And I'm noticing, as of today, I caught a good glimpse of them when I was coming home from work, that they're actually starting to get pin feathers now. So I think it's only going to be maybe another week or two before they're fledging. And that's pretty quick. I mean, I used to raise cockatiels way, way back in the day, and I'm used to, you know, baby birds and them growing very quickly. But these two are, looking like they're doing quite well. So far, I think people are generally leaving them alone. I noticed that the neighbor across the hallway from me has noticed them and has been putting out water for them. So hopefully, they'll get fledged and get out of there, because I really don't think it's a good place for them. However, they do seem to be safe for the moment, and in the rainstorms that we've had over the last weekend, have not gotten wet, or, they don't seem to be inconvenienced in any way. So, that's your pigeon update. I'll keep you guys posted, of course. So, let's move on. So, a few weeks ago, I mentioned I was going to be doing a travel show, and this is kind of going to be that show. And the thing that spurred this topic was a comment from Scott Mitchell. Now, Scott and I, in addition to both being involved in Plain Dudes Radio, we also send back and forth audio clips, sort of an audio correspondence. And he was commenting on one of these about the various trips that I've taken, and, you know, came out, of course, that I've been to Europe something like 9 times now. And so, you know, he had the question of, well, how can you afford that? And he knows I'm not rich. He knows that I don't have some sort of incredible income that allows me to take all these fancy vacations. And I think that, you know, a lot of it is that I don't travel in a way that is fancy. So I wanted to talk a little bit about this, because it is, after all, the vacation season. It's a time when a lot of people are traveling. Now, I do have a feature that I'm going to be starting soon. I'm a little bit unsure about whether I'm going to do it on the live show or whether I'm going to do it on the pre-recorded show. But I am going to actually be starting to do a segment called Tom's Travels. And it'll be my experiences in various parts of Europe mainly. So, for example, the first one I'm working on is going to be about Amsterdam. And then maybe Austria. Maybe I'll go in alphabetical order. Maybe I won't. I really don't know. But that's something that I'm thinking about, and something that I'm actually actively planning for, and maybe this will turn out to be something interesting, and maybe it won't. I suppose it really depends on how interested people are in the topic. But I suppose my point here is that, you know, it's not difficult to travel on a budget. It's not difficult to travel on the cheap. And you really don't lose much of anything in the translation. For example, you can get these package tours, and I've seen them in the back of Smithsonian Magazine or whatever. For these history tours or whatever. And you get these deals through travel agencies. Sometimes you get your airfare and 2 weeks in Rome for $2,500. And it's inevitably, double occupancy. So it's per person. So if a couple goes, it's twice that. And I find any of these deals, most of these deals are just outrageously expensive, because you can go and you can spend 2 weeks in Rome as an independent traveler for about half that, and you still get to see pretty much all the same stuff. And it doesn't really make any sense to me to spend that kind of money. Of course, you know, you get, you know, all-inclusive holidays and that. And I talked about a little bit in a past show about Russ Patzold and his girlfriend Donna, who went to Spain on holiday, but they really didn't experience anything of Spain. I mean, they went to a package holiday to a resort. They stayed in the hotel. They drank at the hotel bar. They pretty much were socializing with other British people at this resort. And, you know, if that's the sort of holiday that you want to do, more power to you. I don't find that kind of holiday very satisfying at all. When I go abroad, and this is anywhere, but in particular in Europe, I want to live as though I'm a native, and I wanted to experience the sorts of things that natives do, as opposed simply to doing the tourist things. Though I do the tourist things too, don't get me wrong, because that's of course a big appeal of going somewhere would be like going to Paris and seeing the Eiffel Tower and the Mona Lisa. Yeah, so the tourist thing is actually part of the experience. But you don't want to get carried away doing the tourist thing. So my first tip for people who are wanting to travel, and they want to travel on a budget, is first determine what your budget is. And obviously, when you're determining that, you need to decide how you want to travel. And this is part of what I did at my last job, actually. I worked as a travel consultant. Now, mainly what we did was we sold books and maps and luggage and stuff like that. And we were a travel store. And, you know, it was always helpful to know from the clients that we were working with what kind of traveler they were, what sort of budget they had, and so forth, because that could help us determine, oh, well, they might be interested in this, or they might be interested in that particular product. But if you're going to be traveling on a budget, by far the cheapest way to stay anywhere is going to be in a hostel. Now, obviously, a hostel is going to be more amenable to somebody who's younger. They used to call them youth hostels. They really aren't, I wouldn't say, anymore. I'm sort of at an awkward age because, you know, you have hostels that are more geared towards young people. There's some places in, I believe it's Bavaria is an example of this, where you can't stay in a hostel if you're over 25. But there is such a thing as an elder hostel, and I think you have to be at least 50 to get in there. So I'm in this kind of awkward age where I can't stay in an elder hostel, and I probably wouldn't want to anyway. But hostels are, of course, a very inexpensive accommodation option for about, you know, depending on where you are, probably about $20 a night, you can have a space in a dormitory with several other people. Now, it used to be that these dormitories would have been, you know, maybe 20 people per room. That's really not so much the case anymore. Nowadays, it can be as few as 2 per room and as many as about 12 per room. And you still find a few of these, you know, ginormous rooms that have, you know, 24 people in. But they're less and less common because most people like having a little bit more privacy. I don't generally stay in hostels now, mainly because I'm a little bit older and because I realize that I am an inconvenience because I'm one of those people who snore. If you're a light sleeper, hostels aren't for you. But as a result of that, I've decided more in my more recent travels that B&Bs and pensions are really more the way to go. I don't need to stay in a 5-star hotel. I've never needed that. It's a waste of money as far as I'm concerned, because a hotel or a hostel or B&B or whatever, it's basically just a bed for the night and breakfast in the morning if you're lucky. So, you know, keeping your costs down is always good. If you need to stay in luxury, then you don't need a budget travel guide anyway. So I suppose that you won't be listening to this show. But one of the first tips that I would offer to people, and I had a lot of people come to me and says, well, my son or my daughter, you know, they're graduating from college. They want to go to Europe for 2 weeks and see Europe. And I always sort of cringed inwardly because you can't see Europe in 2 weeks. You will go crazy trying and you won't have any fun. And so what I would normally recommend, well, and I would say to the client even, it's like, well, you know, you're not going to really be able to see all of Europe in 2 weeks. You can hit the major population centers in 2 weeks and maybe spend, you know, 2 or 3 days per place. But it's not going to be that fantastic of an experience because you're going to be spending a lot of time traveling. People don't always think about that. of how much time you spend getting from one place to another. And if you're traveling around a lot, you only have 2 weeks. My main recommendation is you go one place or maybe two places for 2 weeks. So, for example, one of the places that I would quite commonly mention to people who've never traveled abroad before would be London. And one of the reasons why is because London, obviously, they speak English. So it's also a place that has a lot to see and do, a lot of tourist attractions, a lot of cultural heritage. And so for that reason, you know, it was a place that's a good place to start for your very first trip abroad. The disadvantage, of course, of London is that it's expensive there. It's probably the most expensive place in Britain to stay. And I think Dublin is getting pretty close now, but London is right up there. And generally speaking, now I don't spend very much time in London because I've already seen the tourist stuff. I really don't need to stay there for any reason other than possibly to socialize with friends that I have that live in that area. So I don't generally stay there. But for a beginner destination, you can't beat London because there's a lot to see and do. And like I said, they all speak English. The other advantage, of course, is that they have a decent public transportation system. You don't have to rent a car. In fact, it would be really foolish to rent a car in London. And there are cheap accommodation options there. Well, you kind of have to look for them, and some of the ones that you find might not be so good. But, you know, we were staying in hotels in London, and they were reasonably okay, up in the area of Bridgewater, up in near Paddington, up in that area up there, you're looking at some places that are going to be about $45 to $50 a night. Now, that's not the cheapest that you can get, but that's probably the cheapest you can get and not have to worry too much about bed bugs or people coming in and renting the room next door by the hour. So, you know, that's certainly one of the options. So my general rule of thumb when I've been traveling in Europe in the past has been that I will take a flat rate per day. And it used to be back when I was traveling, back in 96, my budget was $50 American a day. You can't really do that anymore. It's a little bit beyond what you can do even as a budget traveler now. But certainly you can do $60 or $70 a day per person without too much trouble. Obviously, two travels cheaper than one as far as accommodation goes, because a lot of the hotel rooms won't charge you any more for two than you would for one staying in the same room. And sometimes that goes for B&Bs as well, though usually there's a slightly higher rate if you have two. Once you decide where you want to go, then you have the option of taking a, you know, guidebook or a map or something of that nature. That can be very useful. And also doing research online to determine exactly where you want to go. And do a little bit of trip planning before you go. It's very useful to do that. Now, one thing I haven't addressed yet, and that is getting from point A to point B. That's another big advantage of not trying to see all of Europe in 2 weeks. And the reason why is because if you're in a place like London, you have a lot of public transportation options. But let's just say that you want to go from Paris to Munich to Rome, and you only have 2 weeks to do this in. Probably your best option is to get your rail pass. Now, they're not as cheap as they used to be. They're not as good a deal as they used to be. But they're still a pretty good deal as far as transportation goes. And there are several different ones that are designed for different styles of travel, so it's worth looking into. You can actually probably save about a third by getting your rail pass than you would be able to get point-to-point tickets. The main advantage, of course, is that your rail pass is first class. If you're under 26, you can get a youth pass, which would be second class. That'll be cheaper yet. So there is that option. Now, the other thing about, you know, getting from point A to point B is obviously the longer you stay in one place, the less you need to spend. So that's another way to keep within budget, is by staying in one or two places for your whole vacation. You don't need to try to see all of Europe. Like I said, you won't succeed. There's just too much of it there. The other thing that I find keeps your budget down very well is going on hiking vacations, because hiking is free. And you do have to pay for accommodation and meals, but you're not spending a lot of money on anything else, which is also very handy. And the exercise and fresh air is good for you. So that kind of leads us to eating, and eating can be very, very expensive if you're wanting to eat at restaurants every night. I generally don't eat at restaurants every night. I do sometimes eat in restaurants, but quite often it'll be like a pub meal. Now, pub meals tend to be pretty hearty. They tend to be fairly cheap. Kind of misconception is that it's actually cheaper to go to, you know, KFC or McDonald's and eat fast food. Nothing could be further from the truth, especially in Europe. Fast food over there is not any cheaper than going to and getting a nice pub meal. In fact, I would say going to McDonald's is probably about the same as you could go to a pub, get a perfectly fine meal in a pub for about the same price as going to McDonald's. It's going to be better food. So that's going to apply mainly to, you know, to the UK, but there's other options in other countries, and it's really just kind of a matter of finding them. A lot of places will have street vendors who will be selling things like panini or whatever. Now, obviously, you want to have a look and make sure it doesn't look too dodgy, but I've never had a bad experience as far as street food is concerned. And I've talked about on the show before about, you know, sometimes you'll find something interesting, like chestnuts. When I was in Spain and Portugal having roasted chestnuts on the street during the winter, and you get a big newspaper cone of chestnuts for like $2. So, I mean, it's a really good deal. Fantastic. Very, very filling, and it was a good stick-to-your-ribs kind of snack that kept you from being so hungry. Now, obviously, the cheapest way of eating is by going to the market. And you go to the supermarket, and they're very much like supermarkets here in the States. They're not really very different, and you can get the kids basically the same kinds of stuff. And quite often, I would go to, like, I would go to a bakery, and I would buy some bread. And then I would go to a cheese shop, and I would buy some cheese. You can still do that in most places in Europe. It's not like here, where it's kind of a convenience store or a supermarket or a restaurant, and those are really your only options. So you can still do that over there, and I would quite often do that, especially when you're on a hiking vacation and you want to carry stuff with you. You want to carry stuff on the trip. The other thing, of course, is that when I'm on hiking trips, especially in the UK, I'm generally staying in a place that does bed and breakfast. And you get breakfast along with your bed. So it's a good, hearty breakfast normally, and that keeps you full. For me, well past lunchtime, when I was traveling with Paul, he needs to eat a little bit more often than I do. But that's still a pretty good deal all around. And a lot of times you feel very full after your breakfast, and you can get through a good part of the day just on that. Okay, so this last little segment, I want to talk a little bit about personal security and about money a little bit. Now, for Americans, this has become much, much easier when traveling in Europe because of the euro. It used to be that you'd have to get different currencies in every country you'd go to. It was a giant, giant pain in the ass. And trust me, I was definitely doing that on my first 3 trips to Europe. And now there's a few countries in Europe that don't belong to the euro, the UK being the most notable example of that. They still use the, you know, pound sterling. And that's fine, because really now you've gone from having about a dozen currencies to have to worry about to really just having like 3 or 4. And most people aren't going to go on a trip to go to all of these different countries that don't use the euro. Obviously, the less you have to change money, the better, because every time you change money, you lose money. And the same goes for traveler's checks, because you would have to pay money to buy the traveler's checks, and then you pay money to actually cash the traveler's checks. So you're losing money there as well. I'll talk more about that in just a second. Now, obviously, if you're a budget traveler, you're not going to be carrying large amounts of money on you. And that's never a good idea anyway. If you need to carry large amounts of money on you, you can get a money belt. I don't like to wear them. They're uncomfortable. But yeah, I would, or money pouch that you put underneath your shirt. You know, just keep your money out of sight, obviously. I walk around like I would walk around here in the States. I have, you know, maybe $50 in cash in my wallet. That usually lasts me a few days. And I pay for accommodation, generally speaking, by credit card. Now, some people don't have credit cards, and that can make it more difficult. Or if you're traveling in a more rural area, sometimes accommodation doesn't take credit cards. Obviously, if you're staying in bed and breakfast, you can inquire. And quite a lot of them do nowadays, so it's not anything that I would worry too much about. That is kind of the easy way to do it, and you can still remain within your budget. Getting money through an ATM is the way to go instead of getting traveler's checks. Traveler's checks used to be kind of the safest way to travel, but it's a complete waste of money now. You have a much better option in ATM cards. For one thing, you get a better exchange rate. And the other thing is, generally, you don't have to pay a fee when you use your ATM card at a foreign ATM. The only problem you occasionally have is if you're in a place like Japan, which is very much a cash and carry society, where you might have trouble finding an ATM to accept an American ATM card. However, that's not a problem in Europe. You can use your ATM card in Europe pretty much anywhere if you're a member of the Plus Network or the Cirrus Network, which are kind of the most common ones. So getting out small amounts of money every day is sort of, or not even every day, but you know, getting a small amount of money every couple of days. That's really kind of the way I travel. Obviously, if you're going somewhere that's way out in the middle of nowhere, like the Highlands of Scotland, then you do want to carry a little bit more money with you. If you're worried about security, I would recommend a money belt or a money pouch. You can get ones made out of silk that aren't as bulky. They're not as uncomfortable. The only thing you need to really worry about is getting them wet. But even then, it's not usually that much of an issue. I generally kind of walk around in Europe the same way I would walk around in the States. I mean, yeah, obviously I live in Chicago. It's a big city and there are, you know, thieves and pickpockets here just as you would have over there. But for gosh sakes, if you're going to wear a money belt, keep it inside your clothes. Same goes for money pouches. Those things are easy as hell to steal. So you want to keep it hidden at all times. And for gosh sakes, don't wear a fanny pack, or what they would call over in the UK a bum bag, because nothing marks you as a tourist with money more than one of those. Violent crime overseas in the more civilized countries, you know, the first world and second world countries, is relatively rare. Unlike here in the States, where you do have a relatively large amount of violent crime, you don't really have that over in Europe, other than perhaps in the UK. I think it's getting worse over in the UK than it used to be. But generally speaking, use your common sense. You don't walk through dangerous neighborhoods. You don't hang around in dark alleys at night. Chances are people are just going to ignore you. The other thing about personal security, and I think it's probably, it's kind of a good idea anyway, is to not dress like a tourist. And you know exactly what I mean. You don't want to wear the shorts and have the big camera on your neck and talk loudly about how things are so much different than they are at home in America. And so you want to blend in as much as possible. Tourists who are obviously tourists stand out like a sore thumb. And not just to the people who live there, but to the pickpockets and the thieves as well. So the more you look like a native, the less likely it is that you're going to get hassled. Now, the disadvantage of that, of course, is that if you're in somewhere like the Netherlands, you might have random people coming up to you and asking you directions. Generally, you'll be able to tell them because they are sunburned, they're wearing sunglasses, Bermuda shorts, you know, loud shirts, and they have a big camera around their neck. And I've had that happen to me, actually, in Amsterdam, of people coming up and asking me to me in pidgin English, you know, how to get to the Anne Frank house. It does happen. So obviously you want to blend in. At the same time, you will stand out to some degree, because especially if you're a smaller town where everyone knows each other, then they're going to notice when that stranger comes into town. And of course, wherever you go, it pays to be aware of your surroundings and everything you have on your person. I mean, that's just common sense, but you'd be surprised at how people will sometimes let their guard down when they're on vacation because they're trying to relax and have fun. And they don't even think that, you know, the number one places where pickpockets are going to go are the number one tourist attractions that everyone goes to. So places like the Sistine Chapel, where everyone is looking up and not paying any attention to their wallet or their purse, or Notre Dame, or the Spanish Steps in Rome. I mean, there's a lot of different places that are notorious for pickpockets, and occasionally you'll see signs in these areas that say, beware of pickpockets, and there's a reason for that. And you know, you want to enjoy your sightseeing, but at the same time, you don't want to be completely oblivious. Anyway, I'm running out of time, so I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. Don't forget, I do a live show every Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time, which is 11 a.m. Eastern Time, which is 4 p.m. over in the UK. And you can go listen to the live show at United Kingdom Radio, and feel free to Skype in, since it's a Skype-in show. And the Skype address is United Kingdom Radio. All right, so that's just about it for this program. Thanks for listening, as always. This is Tom in beautiful Chicago, Illinois, signing off. We'll see you next time.